Welcome to the Dream Life University podcast show, the show that helps you transition from a life you live to a life you love by giving you practical strategies and tools to help you succeed. And now, here's your host, Rhonda Williams.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Dream Life University podcast show. This is episode 9, Women in Power. I'm Rhonda Williams, the Dream Life Coach and your host for the show, where we help you transition from a life you live to a life you love. Today's show is sponsored by Spoiled Naturally, so if you have a chance, check them out at spoilednaturally.com for beautiful and naturally moisturized skin. I am really excited to welcome today's guest, Katie Owens, to the show. Katie is the Vice President of HealthStream Engagement Institute. With 2 decades of experience helping organizations achieve service and operational excellence, Katie has proactively worked to gather the skill set and the knowledge base to effect positive change in the healthcare industry. As a member of the HealthStream leadership team, she oversees the coaching practice and the growth of their patient experience solution. Katie previously served on the leadership team of Baptist Healthcare in Pensacola, Florida, where she supported the system's sustained journey to excellence. Katie is an internationally recognized speaker and the lead author of the HCAHPS Imperative for Creating Patient-Centered Excellence. She is currently working on her second book about the importance of speaking the patient's language. Katie, welcome to the show.
Rhonda, thank you so much. It's an honor to be with you this afternoon.
I am really excited to have you on the show for a couple of reasons. Number one, because I've been so fortunate to meet you and to get to know you a little bit personally. And that was just such a powerful and wonderful experience for me. And then I'm also really excited because I believe that women like you in positions of power is important for us as a society. And while it is very, very important, I feel like it also brings its own set of unique challenges and opportunities. And that's what we're going to talk a little bit about today.
Indeed, it does.
Okay, so why don't we start by having you share with us sort of a short version of how you became the VP of HealthStream Engagement Institute.
Wonderful. Well, when about, 18 years ago, I began working in healthcare in a department called Child Life Therapy. And so we worked with children and their families to adjust to acute onset of illness, all the way through managing complex behavioral plans and behavioral change for children who were waiting for transplantation or post-transplantation. And that really spurred my love, my deep and profound love for healthcare. And over the years have sought out many opportunities to grow in a number of aspects across what I'd call the continuum of healthcare. And about 8 years ago, joined what was known as the Baptist Leadership Group and became an officer for Baptist Healthcare. So I've worked in for-profit, not-for-profit, children's healthcare, adult healthcare, have led internal coaching teams. And 5 years ago, a gentleman named Al Stubblefield asked me to lead the consulting division owned by Baptist Healthcare. And 3 years ago, September 2013, HealthStream formally asked me to join the leadership team when they acquired the consulting practice that I ran at Baptist Leadership Group. And so it's been a privilege and a journey where learning never stops. I think one of the most humbling experiences is getting to serve on the HealthStream leadership team, where we all recognize that we're all works in progress and all striving every day to make sure every patient deserves and should receive care from the best developed workforce.
Oh, that's amazing. And so Child Life Therapy was where your passion, that's where your passion comes from for the patient experience?
A lot of my passion and drive is grounded in those deep interpersonal relationships that I was able to build early on in my career. And what I've seen grown from that over the years, whether it's my time working in healthcare finance or working in change management, is that being a patient is one of the few experiences we all share as humans. We are all concerned about our healthcare and our well-being and the well-being of our loved ones. It's one of those fundamental needs on that, on Maslow's pyramid. I've been the patient. I've cared for loved ones who've been the patients. It's a commonality we share, and just feel that there's no greater calling to me than to be in a position to work with colleagues such as yourself and others who see our work as a calling, that we are people taking care of other people. And it's a privilege to get to work with health systems to fulfill their missions, which is grounded in the patient experience.
You know, Katie, one of the things that I find amazing is we are constantly evolving in healthcare, and the term patient experience is relatively new, but yet I feel like it's growing so rapidly. I now see VPs of patient experience and managers of patient experience. So this entirely new sort of sector within healthcare that didn't really exist before. What do you think is driving that push towards an increased focus in the patient experience?
That's a wonderful question. You know, one of the interesting things is sometimes I believe folks see glamorous, being a patient experience leader is a glamorous role. And for those of us that have put on that gown or worn the crutches or sat in the emergency department while a fracture was being casted, there's nothing glamorous about being a patient. The emerging field of the patient experience, I find, is rooted in a few things. First of all, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services making a decision that part of their accountability to us as providers is the quality of service delivered, which is measured by the CAHPS survey. 10 years ago, I had the opportunity to roll out CAHPS and be a part of one of the early programs for measuring HCAHPS. And what's interesting is we've finally given patients a voice in holding us accountable for the quality of their experience. And I think focus on CAHPS, a focus on moving from a volume-driven model to a value-driven model, increases in transparency, whether it's on the payment side or for quality and safety metrics, has elevated our need to assure that we're putting as a strategic importance the role of the patient experience and putting into leadership roles those that are accountable and focused on building competencies equate to a more consistent experience.
That's amazing. And I think you're right on so many levels. And I am very happy that this has become such an imperative in healthcare. And I really can't wait to see how it continues to grow and build, and also how it helps us continue to open up the dialogue to include the patient. You know, back when I first started in healthcare, you know, there was a little bit of separation there. As providers, we did what we did, and then the sort of the patient was over here, but there's just so much more integration now, and there's so much more coming together and a true partnership that's growing. And I think that that's absolutely amazing and the right thing to do. So thank you for sharing that with me.
You're welcome. And I'm sure you've experienced this in your various career, your accomplished career. One of the challenges that we see is when the patient experience gets delegated. And the patient experience, just like any other outcome, requires shared leadership responsibility and interprofessional collaboration to drive those results.
Absolutely. Could not agree more. And I think that what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to shift a little bit, because we talk about experiences, and to me, the word experience is so powerful. And we talk about it now very easily in terms of the patient, but I want to shift a little bit and talk about sort of our experience as individuals and as women. And it can be challenging as you rise to the top of your industry and your career. I think that there are some unique challenges that face us as women. And so can you share with us what are some of the challenges that you find in being a successful woman in a corporate leadership role?
Sure, I'd love to. So, you know, as I mentioned before, I feel I like to think that I'm self-aware enough to recognize that I'm, like many people, works in progress, and I learn vicariously through whether it's stubbing my own toe or doing my best to learn from others when they've mentored me about times they've stubbed their own toe. One of the most interesting things is that I've found that women are just such natural leaders, regardless of their role, whether it's their role at home, volunteering through school or extracurricular activities, whether it's caring for children, parents, spouses, we are nurturers. And one of the biggest challenges, and it's well documented in Wall Street Journal and other publications, the concept of the double bind, where there are irreconcilable demands. To be good at one thing sometimes means not being as good at another front. For instance, many people look to leaders to be authoritative. Well, sometimes that runs in conflict with a woman's desire to be nurturing. And so what I have found to overcome those challenges is to be true to yourself and to be unapologetic about being the leader that you want to be and setting goals for yourself. And I know I've done that myself. Because there are always a lot of voices and there's always going to be feedback on what you're doing well with and areas of opportunity. I joke around that there is in leadership, there is no shortage of feedback. But if you're true to yourself, you've set goals and milestones you want to accomplish for your company, for your volunteer work, and you feel that you're on a good path for that and you're receiving positive validation, that's the ticket to sleeping at night.
No, that's amazing. And I think you're so right. And I know that when I talk to women, it's we do have this desire to be nurturing because it's a basic part of who we are. And I think one of the challenges for us is sort of to minimize what I call the white noise, right? There's always, and in terms of what you just described, that might be that feedback that there's no shortage of. But I think you have to filter it. And so when I think about some of the white noise, especially in dealing with women, there's this feeling sometimes that if we're trying to be too successful or we are too ambitious, that we're trying to do it all. And people will say that you can't have it all. And you can't do it all. And so how would you respond to people that say that, you know, you can't do it all and you have to choose?
Yeah, I was thinking, I was reflecting on this concept about having it all. And I've got two children. One is about to turn 10, one just turned 4. And as context, I get on about 140 airplanes a year, give or take. A few years ago when my daughter, she must have been about 3 or 4, and I had just come back from a business trip. I had to run her to the mall, and I had a suit and heels on, and she had one of those, and I know you've been there, epic meltdowns in the store. And here I am trying to carry her out of the store. I get a telephone call on my cell phone. I'm in a suit with heels, not feeling like my best self. And all of a sudden I hang up the phone and a woman observed, said, "Wow, you've got it all. Like, you've got the total package. Look at you. You're like a superwoman." And I thought, gosh, the last thing I feel like is a superwoman. I feel like I'm failing on all fronts right now. And I think having it all is relative. it's whack-a-mole. You've got to establish, you know, whack-a-mole, the game where for a buck or two you pay and you get to hit the alligators, and at one moment the alligator pops up and you've got to club it down. I think you've got to establish your priorities and be at peace for what your objectives are, and pay attention to and give regular self-reflection to where you're at on those priorities, because there are good times and bad times on many fronts. And I think it's important to find your own equilibrium.
No, that's amazing. And gosh, you know, you're so right there. I think that as we sort of look at that concept of having it all and trying to still be our authentic self and to be true to ourselves, I sometimes wonder in the world of business and the corporate world, how we are really dealing with the challenges that face us because we're women. For instance, we might have coworkers or peers or subordinates who don't really respond to us in the same way that they do a male. Have you ever experienced that type of a challenge?
You know, I'd probably say I'm in good company with experiencing that challenge. You know, what I would say to any woman who is working to establish herself is to really think about how you communicate, how you establish your personal brand, and stay true to that. You know, what's interesting is, you know, there's a lot of talk about what makes a good leader. Is it somebody who's going to be tough on problems? Is it going to be somebody who can stand up to the bullies? And I can honestly say that I feel like I have never gotten far with force than with influence. And I think that's an important part. And so many people, I think, get tripped up over span of control or direct reports or being perceived as being tough versus any leader that I've ever felt like I would throw myself on the train tracks for, go over the cliff for. They always made me feel good about myself. They always made me feel like I was worthy and that I had an important voice. And I think it can be really tough for us to go against our own instincts and try to appear to be something we're not versus thinking about the leadership characteristics of people you wanted to follow, because chances are they transcend gender. They transcend leadership styles. I myself, if you look at the DISC profile, I'm a high DI, dominant and intuitive. That's my style, but that might not be others. And I think it's important just to think about and write down who are the people you most admire and not try to pretend to be somebody else just based on stereotypes.
That's such great advice. And it sounds like you're recommending that we, you know, don't fall into the trap. Stay true to who you are and think about those leaders that you respect and those that you might even emulate and continue along that path. And I think that's wonderful advice because as you mentioned, we've all had those experiences and it can be a real challenge to, you know, sort of navigate something like that. Yeah. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about, because you are in a position where you manage a group of incredibly talented coaches and leaders, and that is just, I think, an amazing role to be in. First of all, to be able to work with such a highly respected and influential group and team, but just also in how you interact with them on a day-to-day basis. And you know that you have your own life that you're trying to manage and your team is trying to balance. So how do you encourage that life balance, especially because they have demanding roles as well. And what do you say to them in terms of being able to manage their demanding roles and that life balance?
I'm so glad you asked that because I think that balance has to be personally defined. There are probably people who think I have terrible work-life balance, and there's probably some folks that think that I have a generous work-life balance. I think it's important with my team that we have open dialogue and open communication, and that they help me understand what success looks like to them, and they understand the outcomes that I need from them and for myself. Because when you have identified the outcomes, you have clarity, there's a degree of consistency, you know what true north is, and then you work from there. And anytime an individual has said, I need to take care of a personal matter, we've built that rapport and I can trust them. And I think that that's important, is that you build a bi-directional trusting relationship with your leader. I know if a coach has just gotten back from a week-long visit and needs to take some time back to run to the dry cleaning and run errands, that individual has more than delivered on the outcomes. And I'm so humbled to have the team that I have.
No,
I need to serve them. Sorry.
Absolutely. You do have a truly amazing group of very talented professionals who are able to impact the rest of us in the healthcare industry in a very positive way. And it's wonderful. I don't know that I have heard balance defined that way as being personally defined, but I think that that statement that you made is very powerful, because it's one that's very true. And sometimes I believe we are defining balance based on what we see in others versus what we need in our life at that moment, right? Because it may be different today than the balance that I needed when my children were small, and the things that I needed to handle then. That's a very different time than how I would define balance today.
That's a great point.
So what about you, Katie? How do you personally keep yourself grounded while you're still on this track of being a very successful professional and having a very, very successful career and one that is very inspiring? How do you keep yourself grounded?
You know, Rhonda, I wish I had an eloquent response for you here. I've learned to just, to a degree, embrace chaos and be appreciative for all of the gifts in my life, for my family, for our health, for our wellness. And just to be real, literally this morning, I had to find a way to communicate with a four-year-old who wanted Cheetos for breakfast. So it doesn't get much more real with having a knockdown dragout before having to go to work and launch our weekly HealthStream Engagement Institute staff meeting. I have found that for me, keeping myself grounded is surrounding myself with the smartest individuals who are passionate and committed and learning from them. And, you know, sometimes just forgiving myself for being vulnerable myself, that being a leader can be lonely and you have to find ways to relax, to relieve stress. And sometimes just, as I said, embrace the chaos.
No, that's amazing. And I think, I wonder if some of the hesitation with embracing the chaos might be because we sort of equate it with a lack of control, and that we equate with we're not doing something right, and so thereby we're doing something wrong.
That is so well said. And again, I think it comes back to what is your, for some people, that embracing chaos may sound like a scary term. And again, I think that's where you have to think about what's most important. What hills am I going to charge today? What hills can I be blind until tomorrow about? Just being able to prioritize and not try to be all things to all people or all things to everyone.
Wonderful. Very well said. Thank you so much. And so, Katie, one of the things that I love to do on the show is I love to ask each guest to present three key takeaways. And one of the reasons I do this is because people are dealing with a lot of information, and I want our audience members to be able to pull out what are those little nuggets that I can take away that I could even potentially apply to my life tomorrow or along my journey and my path. So if you would you kindly share with us the three takeaways that you'd like for our audience to leave this show with?
Oh, I would love to. First of all, I would say be confident in yourself. Recognize that you have value. You are at the table because you have unique skills and attributes and qualities. And don't be afraid to manage yourself up and bring yourself to the table. Be present. The second I would say is to define your balance, work hard, and use your gifts strategically. That personal definition of balance I find important for myself, and I try to encourage that with my team and with those that I've had the opportunity to mentor. And third, it's probably been a thread throughout, is be authentic and genuine. It's very hard to pretend to be someone else, and that shows through when you are yourself and you're unapologetic about that. That's not to say that we don't have accountabilities and goals that we have to achieve, or we wouldn't be in leadership roles, but find ways to be yourself.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Katie. That was awesome. And I do want to thank you so much for being here today and talking with us about just being a woman and being a leader in a position of power. Thank you so much for that.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity. I hope this has been helpful growth information, and would love to hear any feedback.
Wonderful. Well, for our audience, we will definitely post Katie's contact information. And so we do want to invite you to visit the website and view the notes for the show. And Katie has provided us with some wonderful tips and strategies and things for us to just think about personally as we each continue to define our world and our life that we want to live. And I want to thank everyone for tuning in today, and I want to ask you to tune in for our next episode. And until then, I hope that this episode has helped you take one more step towards living your most amazing life. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in. We encourage you to consider today's takeaways and apply one or more to your life to help you build the amazing life you want to live. And remember to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and share with your friends by visiting the podcast archives at www.thedreamlifecoach.com.